If that wasn't a template, have Rob do the template. I'm not with Casey. I get a job and I'm on thin ice. I'm not doing that. Yeah. I'm not bullshitting you. Have Rob read the open and the close and have Casey do the imaging. This is Casey's podcast today.
This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Casey Johnson, joined today by my colleagues Jason Goff and Rob Schaefer, of course, and our special guest today, Bulls broadcaster Adam Amin. Coming up on the show, Adam's going to go in depth on his first full season alongside Stacey King as Neil Funk's replacement, talk about calling games in a pandemic without fans in the arena, and explore what he sees from this Bulls roster.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
This entire pandemic has been trash for everybody and everything. And it's affected everything that we do and our way of lives and going forward. But bro, the thing that sucks like the third most after the death and the economic just crash and businesses not reopening probably, man, not being able to hoop has been.
It's a high priority activity, man.
Dude, it was part of the reason why Atlanta sucked so much for me. And not only because, you know, professional situation was a little sketch, but like I couldn't find anywhere to get a game.
Yeah, no pickup in it. Like I imagine LA, DC, New York, Chicago.
There is though.
Pretty
there
easy.
There is, but you know, you got to know somebody to know somebody. You know who I actually
that's
started
like, it's like, you know what it is? It's like country clubs. Like in Atlanta, pickup hoop games are like country clubs. You got to have like the hookup.
Right.
In Chicago, you just show up to a park and you're like, all right, you want to, we need four. There, he, come on in.
So I started playing, and KC will know this name, but I started playing ball at this place because I got invited by a guy, right? It was a listener who invited me to a game, and it was in Southwest Atlanta. And I pull up, and there's like a bunch of Benzes outside, right? I'm like, and it's in a church. It's connected to a church. So I'm like, oh, okay. Somebody deacon out here is passing that collection plate down a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
And it's definitely deacon level at that point.
Oh, yeah. The church.
Ben's equivalent in the church, I think, is deacon. Yeah.
Like you got the people who are really there to like give you the word. And then you got the people who you're like, oh, this is a job. and the job's paying well. You know what I mean? So I pull up and I think that's what's going on. And I walk in and I didn't know who this dude was at the time, but you could tell like a dude was getting the ball passed to him by everyone. Right.
Right.
He was good, but he was a little guy. Right.
Okay.
And I start hooping and immediately he's like, I see you, Chi-Town. Cause immediately somebody asked where I was from. I told him Chicago. I became Chi-Town, Casey. Like,
sure.
I see you, Chi-Town. I'm like, oh shit, I got the whole city on my back. I gotta, you know what I'm saying? I gotta hoop, right? It turns out after a couple of sessions, I still don't know. He's like, just call me Zay. And I still don't know who he is. And I see people treating him differently, right? And one day we hoop and he's like, you want to come out tonight? We're going to go kick it. I'm like, cool, we can go kick it. And it ended up being Zaytoven, who is
the producer?
Yes. Yeah. So you look at Tony's face. I love the age dynamic on this show, on this podcast, because KC is like, man, I can't wait to know who Zaytoven is. You know? So KC, he's a huge producer in Atlanta, right? Not just music, but like he does scores, he does soundtracks. He's done music for Beyonce, Gucci Mane, like Migos, like Future. Like, he is part of the Atlanta sound. But all the while, I'm hooping with this dude. I'm like, why they keep passing the ball to this little? Like, he can shoot, and he's a little water bug, but he's like 5'4". You know what I mean? Like, you know that when you walk into certain gyms, certain guys are getting respect for a certain reason. And it, he could play, but it was like dudes were like wide open, and it was like Obama was on the court with us, right? Like, you saw people moving it away from the open shot to kick it to Zaytoven, and I'm like, oh, okay, this makes sense. So. Yeah, I couldn't find a game in Atlanta, long story short. I wasn't going to keep going back so I could pass the ball to Zaytoven. I wanted to, you know what I mean? Like, I wanted to be Chi-Town.
You got to be in a different lobby. You wanted to be in a different lobby at that point.
Right. Adam, man, thank you for joining us. As always, bro, like, to listen to you on the call is fun. It's exciting. It's refreshing. You and Stacey have really – carved out a nice niche, and it seems like, you know, because let's face it, when you take over for a guy like Neil Funk, I mean, I felt the same way, you know, after all the years of Mark Schanowski doing the job that I do now. Once that happens, like, the bar is there no matter what, right? Guys call championships, been around winning teams, like, you know, so, and then you and Jason Benetti doing it last year, and then now you having the gig full time and doing every single game. How has that changed for you in terms of not just your comfort level, but, you know, working Adam Amin into the game without overwhelming the game? Because I've always wondered how play-by-play guys kind of, you know, navigate those waters.
It's strange because I kind of flip-flopped it. You know, like, a lot of guys start in a local job, you know, the Mike Breen's of the world. Mike Breen, as far as I'm concerned, is the best NBA announcer. I think he's passed Marv Albert. And that says somebody who grew up on Marv Albert. Now, Marv originated all of it, but Mike, to me, has perfected calling an NBA basketball game on TV. And he started as the Knicks guy. He started as, like, the Seton Hall or Fordham guy. Like, they start local and build up into earning the national gig. And then for Mike, he's kept it for how, you know, since 03 or 05 or whatever it is. So, like, that's what most people in this job have done until, like, a couple of guys in our generation. Like, Jason's the same way, where he got his, you know, his first real big break was doing ESPN stuff. My first real big break was doing ESPN stuff. We'd done some local, like, you know, internet stuff and radio, a lot of radio and all that. We were fine, but we got thrust into a national stage. And we've grown on a national stage. And then we parlayed that into getting to do the gigs that, like, I think Jason really wanted to do, right, and the gig that I really wanted to do. Like it's parlayed into that. So it's a little strange kind of feeling like you're almost a finished product going into something like this, right, because I have to adjust fully. Now, I don't think it's taken that long. And I also know that the 2 years of filling in with Stacey, with producers that and graphics and directors that I'm working with now, that made it way easier to kind of dive in this season and kind of feel like you could run a little bit before you really feel like you had to walk. So there's a lot of elements involved that helped with that comfort level. But I mean, it's strange feeling like you have yourself figured out, and then you go, oh, no, you have to adjust to your new audience. Cause most of these people don't know who I am, and nor should they. I have no expectation for them to know who I am. And even now, like, if you don't know your local announcers' names, so what? Just you're there for the team. You're there to watch the game. So it should not be of concern to anybody out there. But for me, it is a concern because I have to make sure I'm appealing to and also serving the new audience that I have now.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Also, man, I mean, I've always wondered, because there's a couple of jobs in this industry that have scared the living shit out of me. And it's crazy that all of us are on this right now. Writing has always scared the shit out of me.
Like, scares the hell out of me.
Dude,
me too.
I'll never forget.
Well, hey, real quick. This is my first time seeing Rob's cut.
Oh, Listen, the cut is sharp, man. Twice a week, we get a chance to behold young Simba here.
You see the evolution on a week-to-week basis. This is my first time in a while seeing my guy.
I got there late last night, Amin. I didn't catch you coming in the front gates. But yeah, it's an adjustment. It had to be done. It had to be done. And it's an audio podcast, so this is great radio right now. People are just imagining what could his haircut look like. What did it look like before?
We don't know. I want people to picture it or like imagine like what does it look like? Like with whimsy and wonder, I want them to think.
Hey, all they got to do is turn to channel zero and check it out. People think I take a picture of us, you know, and say the podcast is loading every week just to promote it. It's not that. It's just so that the proper glory can be attributed to everything that is Rob Schaefer in like, podcast mode. If you were to think podcast mode and then look it up in the dictionary, there it is. Rob Schaefer, ladies and gentlemen. But no, coming from calling national games and calling conference finals and all those things, and every game that you got for a long time was interesting as hell. And the storyline was dope. it's kind of how I go at doing national radio versus local radio.
Like, sure.
National, and I hope the people at ESPN aren't listening, but national radio is cake.
It's like, cake. Like, it is completely structured for you. It is the same 7 to 8 topics. And that's fine. That's the point. That's what it's supposed to be. Right. That is okay. I'm not criticizing it. I'm observing what it is. And it is structured perfectly for you. This Boston, New York, LA, Dallas, all the way down to North Platte, Nebraska, to Grand Rapids, Michigan, like all of it is unique. It's its own unique form and shape, whereas national is made to be this type of all-encompassing tent for everybody to hop into. Oh, I saw Tom Brady drunk. We're going to talk about Tom Brady drunk. Right. Tampa Bay won the Super Bowl. We're going to talk about Tampa Bay winning the Super Bowl. Somebody yelled at LeBron from courtside. We're going to talk about somebody yelling from courtside at LeBron. That's it. That's that. And we just that's an hour right there.
See, but the greatest part is like you do that and then you sit back and you're like, oh, that was a cool show. And then I remember like grinding during a show.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, damn, I got to talk about the Bears backup right guard.
This segment.
You know what I mean? Like those are the things where you're like, I love the city and I love the people, and the connection is something that you don't get with a national audience, right? You get to feel the city in a way that you don't get a chance to feel it. I wonder how that translates to a play-by-play guy like yourself, where every time you drop down in the city, it was a big game because the national audience was there to watch it. Obviously, it was played up. They're picking it for a reason. Or if it's a conference finals, it's a huge game. Careers, coaching, jobs, like all those things are at stake. Whereas I sit here on the pregame show and I try to figure out how not to talk about the same thing we talked about the previous pregame show. Mm-hmm. And after game 20 or so, you're like, no. I think we're done with storylines. We just have to, and shout out to storylines and points. but I, you know, it's interesting to me, like, how do you digest it properly and then try to spit it out for people that you know may not have heard last night's game or the game before that? Like, how do you make sure that you're staying fresh, saying the same things over and over again?
It's funny. The schedule came out today, like schedule updates in Philly, Chicago, a week from Friday is now a national game. I don't know if that means we're not doing it or we're whatever, but either way, there's a national broadcast crew that's going to call that game. And I am fascinated to now see what my old colleagues, friends of mine, are going to say, what's top of mind for them about the Bulls. And I know Zach LaVine's going to be there. I know Billy Donovan's going to be a topic of conversation just because new coach, probably the first look that some people are getting at the Bulls. They haven't been on national TV. So I'm fascinated to know what they're thinking. But I know what they're thinking because I know I've been in that spot where I parachute in to do the game and I need to know what's the 5 or 6 things at the top of the list that I have to know. And then everything else that I can gather, source, whatever, or I get in a meeting is gravy. So now in this position, it's almost a little bit easier in the sense of like, I'm not looking through material as much as I am. Like I posted a photo of my, of some of my prep the other day for yesterday for Pelicans. And it was just like, hey, every like 3, 4, 5 games, maybe every 10 games, I'll go back diving in through everybody's player game log. I do that for every opponent because I'm giving the Bulls audience what I would give a national audience about the Pelicans. So everything I read about the Pelicans, everything I studied about the Pelicans, and everything I watched in highlights against Houston, that's going to be what I would deliver to a national audience anyway. Now imagine that, pretend that I would be doing that for a Bulls team. What would be top of mind for you guys? Like that's probably what we're going to be looking at, right? I would think so. So now in the local job, in the night-to-night job, it's more about what pops up. What pops up? What's important tonight? Everybody knows people are watching game to game. Stacey and I are watching game to game. We're not going to overload. Just every 5 to 10 games, I'll reset some stat stuff. Worked out great last night. Garrett Temple been struggling. Kobe White's been struggling. And sure enough, we were able to relate the last 5 to 10 games for those guys compared to what they did last night.
Yeah. You know what's top of mind? Is Kobe White a point guard?
Well, and you know what? That's probably a question that, I don't know, let's pretend it's Dave Passion, Doris Burke.
Right.
At some point, Dave is going to turn, I guess not turn to Doris because Dave's in Phoenix and they're calling him, he's calling him from home. And Doris is in like Providence or whatever. But like, he's going to ask Doris, is Kobe White a point guard? And she's going to give you, based on her evaluation and her own opinion, what the answer is in her estimation. And Bulls fans are going to either agree wholeheartedly or they're going to say, I hate Doris Burke, except not really because we all love Doris Burke. So.
I'm curious, what's it like announcing without fans, Adam?
Weirder at home than it is on the in the studio, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Because I've used this comparison before. It's almost like when you're in the arena, there's no fan. You see 20,000 seats, or I guess, you know, maybe 15 or whatever, with some of them covered up. You see 15,000 seats and a game going on in front of those seats. Your expectation, for me at least, over 10 years, 15 years of broadcasting, is when I sit down to call a game in an arena and I see seats, I'm expecting noise and I'm not getting it. And generating some of this energy, like I go through highlights on YouTube for not just our games, but like more so for the opponents. And you hear a lot of opponents' broadcast crews and you go through, you know, it's hard not to see some of the comments and it's like, man, this sounds so boring or whatever. And that's not an indictment on the announcers, I don't think, because you listen to those same announcers when there's 20,000 people in the joint and it's hopping and the game is fun and it's energetic. Those announcers sound outstanding. And I'm probably been accused of sounding boring at some point too, because it's harder to generate energy when you have to generate it yourself in a position where you're not used to having to generate it. When I've done games out of a studio, I know I have to do it on my own. You're in a room by yourself, you're just kind of enjoying the moment that is, you're getting a little bit of an audio feed so you can play to that. Whereas now, when I'm in the United Center and I see empty seats and I'm still not hearing that noise, I'm scared sometimes to get up for a play because the other thought in my head is Kobe White going to turn around, look at us and go, man, what the hell was that? Like I'm worried that they can hear us, you know, like we're in the 200 level. We're pretty far away. We have a good view and we're pretty separate from everybody because we need to be. But I still am kind of like, is Kobe White going to turn his head and be like, you mother, like, don't say that about me. And I'm like, I don't know. Is that going to be the case? So I know that's not going to be the case, but that's how your brain kind of plays it out when it's been used to something for a long time.
There are moments though, like even sitting there last night when, cause they have the kind of ambient noise, right? They put on the arena, the crowd noise and the PA announcements and the music to try to simulate it as much as they can. Obviously a lot of that stuff doesn't trickle over a television broadcast, which can be tough. Even like there have been moments, I don't even know if this is our broadcast or maybe just flipping around League Pass where like you can't hear whistles if you're watching at home. And
yeah,
there are all these little ambient things. It's like a bass player in a band. Like you didn't notice that you needed it until it was gone. And
until it's gone. Yeah.
Oh, it's just like screw up the whole song. But that was, that's so funny you mentioned that. Cause I can think of moments when that has been gone and I can hear players like talking on the court, even from the team.
Yeah.
So I feel you. I feel your anxiety there in terms of stuff trickling down. Mm. But even like, I remember I texted KC about this and I told a few people about it, but just that Damian Lillard game. And I mean, I don't know what your experience for that was, but I just remember him hitting that shot and sitting there and being like, my mask almost fell off my face because my jaw dropped with such force. And I looked down, obviously I got to rewrite everything that I've written throughout the entire game. It's flipped everything on its head.
Yep.
And I look up from 15 seconds of typing and everyone's off the floor. Like it's yeah. over. It's just removed so much of the theater and so much of the like buzz, and even a road game, like the energy getting sucked out of a building. There's energy to that, even like in the absence of it. I don't know, man. I just miss it. I don't even know if there's a question at the end of that. I guess one thing I'm curious about just is the transition for you and Stacey, because you mentioned you did fill in very, very capably last year a couple times, and that makes the transition easier. But have all of these hoops that you guys have had to jump through like made that at all clunky? I mean, if it has, it hasn't shown up on the broadcast itself. But what have been kind of the hurdles there in terms of all the newness of this experience as you guys have gotten to feel each other out on a night-to-night basis?
Yeah, I think it's forced me at least to try to be a little bit looser, honestly. Like going back to last night, like, you know, Jason and I ragging on each other's, you know, jackets and stuff, lovingly, obviously. I hope people realize.
Sure.
But like, you know, like it's forced me to be a little bit looser, because if it's, you know, if we're in Oakland, or I guess now San Francisco, to do a Golden State game, and there's 20,000 people at Chase Center, and, you know, Damian Lee hits the game, you know, game winner with a second left, like that atmosphere is going to be at least charged to 50% of that for most of the game. The ambient noise is going to be there. So when it gets to that point where you can just kind of lay back and listen to the crowd chanting defense when the Bulls are bringing up the ball or whatever it may be, you can just kind of lay back. I don't have to call as much, in all honesty. I feel like I'm talking a lot more this year. I think part of it is it has forced us to be a little bit looser, because as much as we want to fight it, we're filling a little bit more dead space than ever. Like, I'm perfectly happy. I've been called a minimalist for a good chunk of my career, and that's something I like. I like being a minimalist on TV, backing away, you know, and kind of just letting the game take care of most of itself. But it's hard to do that when you are in dead silence. And I think that's allowed me to be a little bit looser. I think that's hopefully brought Stacey up to that same plane, you know, where we're vibing on a nightly basis. And I don't think there are very many nights where we're not, like, we're having a good time, we're joking around, and we're calling the game. Like, that's the other thing. Like, we don't prep anything. I prep how I prep. Stacey reads what he reads and watches what he watches, but we just show up. Like, Mark Brady is our producer. He goes, "Hey, here's what we're doing for the open. If you guys want to change anything, let me know." I was like, "Yeah, that's good with me." Stacey has a suggestion. That's how we do it. And we just show up. We try not to overthink it. And I think both of us understanding that with all these other hoops that you were talking about, Rob, I think it's just allowed us to settle in and just, hey, the game's in front of us. We're going to enjoy that. And let's go from there.
Yeah. That dynamic, when you talk about a minimalist too, I thought of Joe Buck immediately. And I think of all, like, he gets crap, obviously, which I think everybody on this pod would agree is not justified. But I just think of all the great calls of his career where he really has just let that moment sit. You know what I mean? I hadn't even thought of that from a play-by-play announcer perspective. That is really interesting, the situation that puts you in.
Yeah, I think he's one of the great, especially on baseball, he's one of the best ever to let the director be a star.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's the other thing. Like, it's hard for a director to be a star right now because you don't have those great crowd shots or fan reactions or whatever. Like, now, granted, we got Benny, which helps. So, you know, Russ and Andrew and all of our, you know, really strong directors, Dave Turner, like, they can knock out Benny real fast if they need to. But you have to really dive in for the story. You got to look at players' faces. You got to look at reactions. You got to really do a deeper dive, because you don't have, it's not a crutch, but like, it's an easy go-to after a basket to look at the crowd going nuts. And you don't have that. And being a minimalist is harder these days because you don't have those things to lean on to let your teammates, you know, really feature what they're best at.
What's the easiest thing and the toughest thing about calling a normal Zach LaVine game?
Easiest thing is anticipating that the ball's going to go in. Like,
the shooting splits are ridiculous this year, man.
It's unreal. The true shooting percentage and the effective field goal and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, he should be a 50-40-90 guy, you know, like, he's got the ability to be a 50-40-90 guy, which is wild. And I think the list is fairly short, Casey. I think it's maybe between 7 and 10 players that have ever done it. Maybe it's 12 now. I think Malcolm Brogdon
it's jumped up a little bit more in the last
early teens now. Yeah, I think. Yeah. I mean, Durant has done it. Curry's done it. Yeah, Brogdon, I think, was the last one. Curry and Durant, I think, were the last couple. Nash had a year like that.
Just say Nash, but like, yeah,
there's not, but it's not very many players. Right. You know, it's a short list, less than 15. So, you know, he could be that. That's nuts to think that he is the caliber player to be a 50-40-90 guy. I think the hardest thing is to take the roller coaster of feel with Zach, because I think that's the portion, the intangible portion of his game right now that is still being refined is feel. I think the best example of that was that four game stretch on the West Coast where they went 1-3, but lost the three losses were by like 10 points or whatever. Right. And he takes that shot in the Portland game. Could you question that shot? Mm-hmm. You're up one, you know, you're trying, you make it, it's a dagger, you miss it, you're giving Portland a chance to come back. But he made it. So it feels like a really good shot.
Right.
A couple games later, you got the Lakers game, you got the Clippers game, more so the Lakers game, where you really have a shot to win it at the end. And maybe the shot comes either A, a little early, or B, not in the flow of, you know, Thaddeus Young is 17 feet away at the top of the circle. And that's not a criticism. I think that is watching somebody who is really start. This is like when Thor figures out he doesn't need the hammer, right? Like, I think he's I just watched a couple of the Avengers movies the other day. So it's in my head, this analogy, but like, he's been given this power. Like, he's figured out, oh, I have this ability. I have this next level capability as not just a great scorer, but as an elite level shot maker in this league. So when you're starting to discover that, you have to experiment. And I think that's experimentation. Mm. Is that the right time? Is that time and score, game feel? What we're seeing now, his aggressiveness in the first quarter compared to when he was really passive last week in the early quarters. Now he's being super aggressive and look what's happening. That's a feel thing, you know? And I think right now in this stretch, in this current iteration, it was probably incumbent on Zach to be very aggressive. He's also cognizant that Kobe needed to get involved last night. That's a feel thing. And that's a win in that column for Zach last night. So I think watching that development, the roller coaster of that, is hard sometimes as a fan. But I think if you take a step back, you realize it's really just watching an evolution of an elite level player.
It's funny you bring up that shot at Portland and like the parsing of the late game shot selection. Cause I always maintain like, what was the game? Rob's my young detail guy. I've covered too many basketball games. What was the game where he scored 45 and took the last shot? The
airball. That was Clippers.
Yeah, people were like questioning that shot selection. I was like, the Portland shot was way harder.
The Clippers shot was a good shot. The Clippers shot.
Yeah, I know. I found it hard to believe that like people were texting me like questioning his shot selection. I'm like, the dude hit 10 3-pointers, scored 45 yeah. points, and took like yeah. a good, clean look at the end. We're questioning his shot selection. I thought the Portland one was the one you could make a better case for yeah. quibbling on, like you say. I mean, they're up, but he's got the ability to hit those shots. So I always say, we've talked about on this pod ad nauseum, Jason knows, like, and part of it's just where the bull, it's a reflection of where the Bulls are. Yeah. Zach is parsed to a nth degree that I just do not get sometimes, man. I mean, like,
is that something you want, Case? Is that something that if you're being looked at as like an elite level player, is that something you crave, do you think, in your conversations with Zach or other guys at you know, high level?
I think he might be a little bit annoyed by it.
That's fair.
You damn right he is. You damn yeah. right. This city, listen, man, this city is great.
Here we go.
He should be, though. Like, after
that's
while,
what I'm saying. Like, are you inviting that because you want to be, like, I think he's talked about how he wants to be coached and how he wants to be pushed. And
but he can't,
is that part of it?
He can't win. He can't win because the love is never balanced with the beatdown, right? Like,
but it never has been, right? It never has been. Has it ever been balanced?
But this is the thing. When you're playing at the level that he's playing at, like we just extolled the virtues of how efficient this man has been. He was empty calories, Zach. Then he was high volume shooter, Zach. Now he's you can't win with him, Zach. And all along the way, he scored 29 a game, getting close to fit. Like, there are a lot of players in the NBA who, for whatever reason, you know what it is? This city is a city full of haters. And when anybody can do it as smoothly and as nonchalantly, seemingly, as Zach LaVine does it, they can't wait to glom on because, you know, oh, my goodness, I can never operate like that in my industry. So how's he able to do it so coolly? And then you can look at the wins and losses, which are obviously an issue, right? So if you're not winning and you're moving the way he's doing it, like if Zach LaVine was some grunt who was scoring 17 a game and getting 5 and 5 and shooting some weird percentage, but he was screaming and he was bossing people around and all this, and they still were losing, I promise you he wouldn't be getting the smoke. But since he's a premium athlete and he moves the way he does, it's the John Garland effect. It's a bunch of guys who, you know, come into the city and it's like, hey, man, I am not revving at those RPMs that you want me to, and right, still being good. Like if you're losing, they want you to be Rudy, but if you're winning, they don't give a shit. So yeah, until he wins, has to be, you know, he has to be screaming and he has to be dunking ferociously. For instance, the Alex Len play, I would have loved to see Zach cock it back. He had a runway. He should have cocked it back and boomed on that bump. But what he did is he slithered to the left the way he's done before, right? Like he's
been able to finish that way. And he goes, why wouldn't I be able to finish the same shot I have finished 100 times already this season?
I think he wanted the call. I think, to your point, Chase, I think he sees Alex Len and he thinks at the very least, this is a foul.
But this is the thing. I didn't like, I would have loved to see him throw himself into that guy and piss and moan if they didn't call it. Yeah. Right.
Right. But
that's
right.
The problem. If he's like Darren Erstead in basketball shorts, everybody loves him. But since he's the California cool kid, you know what I mean?
Then yeah, like, this is the Rodgers effect too. Like, this is the California guy who's not going to try.
Great call.
We applaud Coby White, and rightfully so, because it feels good to root for this kid. Last night, when we told him on air, you were listening, Jay, when we told him on air, hey, you and Zach, and he goes, hey, that's cool, but hey, we got the win. And right, and we asked him two questions, and then I was like, you know what? A very mature, reasoned response from this young man. Congratulations on the win, Coby, and best luck Friday. And we applaud that because it's a measured, reasoned response. Considering some of the things that I think Zach has brought up, Billy Donovan has brought up, that every team elite, you know, scorer, number one player brings up, hey, like, because they're going to get asked about it on their Zooms in post game. Hey, was that a foul? What were you looking for? Like, everybody, all those guys get asked those questions. Durant gets asked those questions. Kyrie, James Harden, all those Brooklyn guys, they get asked those questions. Mm-hmm. Bradley Beal gets asked those questions in Washington too, because he's the only one doing anything right now for the Wizards. Everybody gets those questions. And I think to have a response that doesn't teeter one way or the other emotionally, I think you got to give Zach a lot of credit for that, because that's part of his evolution as well as the top dog, not just as the alpha scorer, alpha player, but as the guy that, hey, what does Zach think about this in the locker room? So we can get, like, he's got final approval. He's the guy. If he needs to do something, you kind of have to, you know, give him the leeway to talk about stuff, to do stuff, to yell at guys, to take the shots when they need to be taken. All that power comes with a certain level of responsibility. And I think considering that, he has handled that exceptionally well based on where he was in his career as a player to where he is now.
All that is cool. And listen, I agree with all that. And in the Alex Len instance, I wish he would have thrown himself.
Of course. I was calling Knicks Heat the other night. I wanted RJ Barrett to dunk on Jimmy Butler and try to tie the game. Like, everybody gets that criticism because it's an ability that they have that none of us do. So we want to see it happen, of course.
But the issue that I have with Bulls fans, some Bulls fans, because I feel like some of these things, like, it's kind of
a volume issue too in Chicago, because, like, it's just big city. You're going to have more haters by volume. It's same deal in New York, LA, all that stuff.
I think some of it is, like, for instance, like the anthem issue, and I tweeted about it yesterday. Like, I don't know anybody who's pissed about the anthem either staying or going anymore, right? Because if the anthem—
Did anybody notice in Dallas? Did anybody actually notice it before? But
this is how I feel. If the anthem, if you stop playing the anthem and black people are still marginalized, then who gives a shit? Right?
What difference does it make at that point?
So what I'm saying on the Zach train, listen, I understand. Yes, Zach has growing to do. I understand you may think that Zach isn't a great enough defender yet. I understand that you may think that he needs to be a better playmaker for how offensively brilliant he may be. But he's scoring 29 points a game. So at what point do we cut the shit and stop acting like that's not happening? Right? Because all you can tell me, oh, he scores on a bad team. You know what? A lot of guys are on bad teams and getting 16 and 17, and their teams are staying bad and not in games because they can't get 29, right? Like, I hate the fact that basketball-wise, I got to sit – because it sounds like I'm waving, like, Zach pom-poms. I'm just waving basketball pom-poms.
This is the way it's been forever. Like that's the thing. Like, and maybe this is it. Maybe this is the olive branch that you feel like you can reach out. And I'm sure you're tired of putting the olive branches out, but I'm opting to give you one here if you want to use it for some of these folks. I feel like this is a good feeling to have. This is a good discussion to be able to have if you are a basketball fan in this city, because since, what was it, 17? No, so what, 18? So 3 years now. No, there is no postseason basketball in this town. Right. There has not been a playoff game. So I, and it's only happened a couple of times in this last, 7-8 years. So I understand like being starved for it, but man, I get where your frustration might come in, where all of a sudden people revert back to 97 and the attitudes that came along with thinking you're an elite level team. Like it's a nice transition. Like, let's appreciate this for what it is right now. This is what you wanted, right? New front office, new head coach, Zach taking the next step, Kobe figuring things out, which is going to be an up and down thing anyway, and a bunch of role players who are trying to figure out what that role is. And now what's the step up? Is it wins and losses? No, not necessarily. It never is, unless you make an overhaul and right. bring two Hall of Fame guys in. It's never like that. This is the first step of many steps towards, if you want to go lofty, towards championship level play. But it's a lot of steps to get there. And if this is the first one, which I feel like it probably is, being way more competitive in games compared to what it's been like the last few years, then this is what the process is going to look like. This is what Philadelphia looked like. By the way, Philadelphia looked a lot worse than what the Bulls have looked like the last 3-4 years. A lot. People forget about 0-17 to start some seasons. People forget about 0-12, 0-13. To start some years. People forget in DC that they went 0-12, 0-13 to start some years before Wall and Beal and all these guys started to figure some things out 6 years later.
Even yeah. if, and I'm going to hand it over to KC and Rob, but even if that is the case, even if you think that there's going to be nothing in sight in terms of cool, but for now, in this moment, you enjoy basketball and you're not enjoying watching him play basketball, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
46 is no joke, man.
I heard people today say, well, he's just a people that sound like they call travel a lot. You know what I mean? Like people who you can tell get
ranked. Yeah, they're yelling at the 12-year-old's 12-year-old referee. The 12-year-old game. Junior high basketball game, they're yelling at the ref.
People who get rankled by like a crossover dribble. We're like, oh, well, he's just a gunner. And, they lost to the Wizards. And I'm like, hey, man, listen, I understand, right? I understand. You want a new home, right? You want a new house. You want something new and comfy to live in. And you want to get out of this house. But you don't leave one of the kids behind when you're moving. You know what I mean? Like, we're still, this is still entertainment. Right.
Yes.
And it's been too damn long since this team was a championship contender and for everybody's liking. But man, on the way there, do you know how many bums teams have to have? Like, teams have to have legit bums as their number one player sometimes.
Yo, okay. Right? So again, I go back to Tuesday. I got Knicks and Heat. I'm doing my, I'm going back through my Knicks prep because we had already seen them, the week before with the Bulls. And I'm like, Jeff Hornacek, Mike Woodson, Derek Fisher, Kurt Rambis, Mike Miller, David Fizdale. Like, they went through how many coaches since they've made the playoffs? Mike Woodson was the last. Mike is an assistant for Tibbs now on that staff. He was the last coach to take them to the playoffs 8 years ago. Like,
and they hated him.
And they hated him. And they couldn't wait to run Mike Woodson out of that New York job. And I'm glad Tibbs brought him back. He's a good coach. He's a good guy. But that was the last guy that brought you to the playoffs. Like, I hope you understand that it can be a lot worse. If you're looking at the biggest scope, and we said it last night, talking specifically about Kobe, like, it's going to be ups and downs. And in the last 5-6 games, yeah, it's a down stretch. That happens to most NBA players. But if you're taking the biggest step back and trying to look at the 30,000-foot view for a lot of these things, then, yeah, it's very easy to look more positively about everything that's happening than it is to look at it negatively, unless you really want to look at it negatively. You got to work to get to that point because there's too much good stuff in the grandest scheme of things right now to kind of focus on and be appreciative of. And, yeah, what we do on a night-to-night basis when they lose games or when they're not playing well, yeah, we say it. We criticize it despite what some other people may think. I think we actually are fairly critical when Zach makes a bad play on defense or when there's a backdoor cut that's blown or when pick and roll coverage, which, by the way, the Bulls are the worst pick and roll defense statistically in the NBA. The second worst is the Clippers. So we'll see whose pick and roll defense is good on Friday night. We got the stat to prove it. Pelicans are a very good pick and roll defense, by the way. Bulls did a good job in pick and roll last night, or pick and pop and driving kick games. So anyway, like, we're fairly critical when they don't play well on a night to night basis. But if you're looking at the grandest picture, it's a lot to enjoy right now. And LaVine is A1 line item one on that list right now.
Well, this will be my second reference to this guy in this podcast history, but you're talking about, to your point, Adam, about how things can be worse. I covered an entire season with Ron Mercer as a number one option. So. Just going to leave that out here.
Man. Poor Ron Mercer, man.
Nice guy. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah, I understand. Yeah,
First locker room I ever had a chance to be in was Ron Mercer's first year. Yeah, that was quite
some
the,
lean times, right? Some lean years. Some very lean years.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And speaking of Kobe White, you mentioned the five games that he was not Kobe, not even close to Kobe.
Yeah.
What we saw against the Pelicans and what you've seen from him this year and what you know of him from last year, obviously, what's closer to the truth? Him becoming what Billy Donovan and Kobe White have envisioned for Kobe White's game, or what we saw last night?
If I can give you two veterans that, and again, strictly just for to give you a barometer, that's all. If we're looking at him as more of a Chris Paul type at this very moment, I'm saying, and especially after what we saw last night, are we looking at him as a Chris Paul type or as a CJ McCollum type? And both of those options sound fairly appealing. You turn this kid into a CJ McCollum type or let him become that, I think he'd be an exceptional playmaking two guard. Is he a true CP3 type point guard yet? No. I don't think any of us really expected him to be yet, you know, 20 plus games. We were all talking with Billy a couple of weeks back, and he was saying something along the lines of, hey, we're trying to put CP3 as the barometer for this guy. CP3 has been in the league a decade and a half. This kid has not started more than 30 games in his career yet.
And is also born to play that position too. Like, he played it in high school. He played it at Wake Forest. So yeah, there's a
very much so. So again, if you're setting that as the barometer, can he get there? Yeah. I think based on drive, based on skill set, you know, flashes of the skill set that we already have seen in a very small sample size, take that data, take his current skill set and combine that with the type of person he seems to be. Yes, I think he could 15 years from now, you might be saying Coby White was a very, very good, or even dare I say exceptional point guard in the NBA, but there's a decade and a half of unknown there. And I can't predict that no better than Billy Donovan can, no better than Coby can. I think all the elements are there if you want to potentially keep him on that track. But we also, it's hard to not look at the road directly ahead of us. And when you see 30 last night and 7 assists in the flow of the offense, he didn't dribble very much last night. You were talking about it today on radio, Jay, about, like, you know, the Klay Thompson reference, where, like, Klay Thompson averages 4 or 5 assists a game too. And he's an exceptional defensive player. And he does a lot of great things on offense other than shooting. And then, by the way, he's a great scorer. So, I mean, if you can be an operational player at a very high level doing those types of things without having to have the ball in your hands every single possession in terms of initiating the offense. So is there enough of a data sample? No, to figure out if he's a point guard. But if I had to lean one way or the other, if it's a meter and the middle is Coby, one end is Chris Paul, one end is CJ McCollum, and Kobe's in the middle somewhere, I think he's angling more towards a McCollum type right now. And I don't think anybody 8 years from now, if that's the type of player he became, would be upset about that.
And because at the end of the day, those 7 assists came and they came in the flow, but where were his, you know, most noticeable fingerprints on the game? It was in the 15 catch and shoot threes.
Catch and shoot.
Out of his 20 field goal attempts, he made 8 of them. And, you know, that to me was encouraging to see. Jason, it was well-timed after you kind of, you know, on the last show, we're just talking about the fact that you wanted to see the old Coby back. And that was, I think, to put words in your mouth a little bit, like, that was the old Coby, like the gunner, who was just hunting around off the ball, relocating. They had him coming off screens and pin downs and flares and things like that. And it was lucrative. And it's, that game last night to me was sensory overload, honestly. I mean, one of the things about being there is I don't get to listen to the broadcast, or at least as closely as I do when I'm home, but I can't even imagine how much you and Stacey were going off too on it. It's just, at a certain point, when him and Zach and get going like that, it feels inevitable. And what was great about that, though, is as great as absolutely phenomenal as Zach has been this season, and as much as Coby has had the flashes here and there, which is kind of similar to his rookie year. I mean, that was the story of his rookie year, right? Was once in a blue moon, the brightest flash imaginable was there, and then it would go away, and there were the ups and downs. And to your point, I'm someone that, one, thinks whether he's a point guard or not, the experience of taking on advanced playmaking duties at this age is going to add a component to his game and his development, no matter what he ends up being. I've been saying that since the beginning of the year, and no matter how, you know, poorly it seems to be going at times, I think that overarching truth will end up being true over the course of his career. So you have that aspect of it. I lost my train of thought there. I don't know where I was going with that, but basically it was just an incredibly fun game, and it was fun to see him really thrive in that role that we all know that he can excel in, but then you still see that 7 assists being contributed to. He's been a great rebounding guard this year.
Yeah.
I don't know where he ends up. I really don't, positionally, skill wise, production wise, but to your point about the mentality, I swear, man, since the first day you meet that guy and you hear his story, like, I just feel like whatever he can be, he's going to be. That's all I can really say about it. And, you know, last night it was a great example of it. I loved everything Billy Donovan said after the game too, about his "I'll show you" attitude, the being doubted, the "oh, he's come to me and said, I've never really played point guard before. This is a brand new experience for me, and it's happening 1,000 miles an hour at the NBA level." Whatever he can be, he will be. I think that's kind of my mantra on Coby White at this point. And we'll see what that ends up being. Like you said, I mean, we've got so much time in front of us, even this season. I mean, it's just so easy to get wrapped up in you know, results of one game or the next one. And that's part of the price of, you were talking about the differences between being national and local. That's one of the prices of this job, Casey, for all the writing that we did through the pandemic, analyzing, you know, what's, you know, random deep rotation guys. Like, what's Luke Kornet's on this team next year? You know, we've joked about that on the pod, not anything at Luke Kornet personally, but we just get so deep in the weeds on the local level, yeah, especially writing, that it can be hard to see the bigger picture of it. I'm glad that you hit that with Kobe. It's certainly true of Zach too, when we talk about just the perspective on what he's doing, even if it's not, you know, translating to the wins that this city is accustomed to yet, the grander perspective on it is always important to have.
Yeah, I think that's key for us too, you know, because once in a while we have to hit the reset button for ourselves. Like, you can't, like, we ride the waves as a local broadcast crew, and I'm sure you guys are in similar positions, and I know Jason is on the show. Like, we ride the waves. When the wave's going good, you just let it happen, and you just have to enjoy it for what it is, because there are going to be some stretches where it's down, and we've seen that already. You know, a few losing streaks, some really frustrating losses. Like, you're going to have some down moments. So how deep do you want to get into it? Because either way, you could parse this roster all the way down to nuts and bolts and say, and justify trading everybody, or you could be as Pollyannish as possible and say, this is a championship level team now. They just need one or two pieces, like, whatever it is. Like, you can take whatever track you want, depending on how you perceive the data in front of you. I think it's incumbent on us as well. And Casey, I think, makes a point. Like, you could tell Zach gets not upset, but like frustrated by it sometimes, or annoyed by it. I'm sure Kobe has been annoyed by it the last few games, where he feels like he's under attack when, you know, it's not a personal thing. You're getting paid to play this game, so naturally we're going to have some kind of evaluation of it. And, you know, relative to how big of a business this is, it's incumbent on us to try to hit the reset button once in a while as well, to just say, all right, let's take the national approach and say, what is the big picture here? And is it going in the right direction? And I think in that sense, yes.
I mean, did you read Rob's story last night, man? It sucked. I'm just kidding.
I've always wanted to do that. I've always thought about that. If the script was flipped and I had Kobe White over my shoulder, you're not typing fast enough. Oh, you know what I mean? I'm sure that they would love a little role reversal in that regard. One time or another. But I was going to say, one moment I had to hit the reset button today. I was looking up for our points bet segment that we're going to do a little bit later here. I was looking up, like, oh, what topic are we going to do? And I was looking at six man of the year odds. I was like, is there anything interesting we could talk about here? And shout out to points bet, but I didn't see Thad Young on the leaderboard, the top 15 to 20 of six man of the year odds. And I had a moment where I felt some kind of emotion in me, like some kind of injustice. And I had to take a step
it's
back.
Like, it's like putting a cigarette out on your arm just to feel feelings again, Rob.
I had to take a step back and just go, whoa, whoa.
He was on the MVP odds board, Rob. He was on the MVP odds board.
Hey, but you know, Rob, you know, you can go to Points Bet, name a bet custom feature, and probably get that Thad Young bet line for you. So, you know, I'm just saying.
A little request. That's cool.
That's all I'm saying. You know, speaking of Thad, when do you think that he is going to crumble into dust? Because we make fun and you guys make fun of Denzel with the old man game. But man, Thad Young, dude. I remember when Thad Young was drafted out of Georgia Tech and what he was.
Philly, at. Man. This is a first round pick. This is a legitimate talent, man.
He's a player. He's a real player.
This guy's an actual ball player, man.
And for whatever reason, like, he morphed into the old guy within like 3 years. Like, I remember Thad Young coming out of Georgia Tech and, like you said, going to Philly and, you know, of course, his Indiana years. But like, Thad was the, I can guard everybody, I can do everything for you, you know, just don't rely on me, because, you know, I'm, you know, he's not a star player, he's a terrific role player. And then you kind of, you know, he bounces around the league and he's still valuable, and then he drops here in Chicago and you're like, okay, this would be a vet who could teach the kids how to, you know, how to move, how to be a professional, how to kick it, and then, you know, come to work the next day. Like, all the things that we don't talk about and do talk about that vets are important for. Yep. And then all of a sudden, he's part of one of the best bench units in the NBA, and he's running up and down. We're calling him Thagic Johnson. Like, how much fun has it been watching a dude like that find whatever he's found, you know, and be an attractive piece for a lot of teams come March 25th?
Yeah, I think his skill set should never be really overlooked. I think over a long period of time, this is a decade and a half of like strong NBA play. Like, like this is like every team has loved this guy. Every locker room has loved this guy. He's contributed as a scorer everywhere he's gone. The scoring isn't that surprising to me. And neither is the defense. It's not surprising to me at all. Some of the distribution stuff, maybe it has been a very pleasant surprise, or at least I wasn't looking to him to be a guy who's going to get you five assists every time he comes out on the floor for 28 minutes a night. That's not what I was expecting. And the fact that you're getting that is a huge bonus. And it helps that it comes in a package of somebody that is, that has the demeanor that he does, that is playing a certain, you know, like elder statesman role on a team that desperately needs elder statesmen. But, and again, I say this, Thaddeus and I are the same age. We are 34 years old, and I'm speaking about him. Or
Don't age him now.
Yeah, that's right. He's 32. I'm older than Thaddeus Young. He's going to turn 33. I just turned 34. I'm older than Thaddeus Young, and I'm speaking about him as if he has like the beard and the staff saying you shall not pass when he draws a charge every night. Like the relative ages of these players in my head blows me away. LeBron is 2 years older than me. And it's like he could easily be 50. It's nuts what this league has done to our brains.
Are you saying it's 50s old?
Come on. Yeah.
There it is. Exactly. I knew Casey was going to take offense to that. I'm trying to take a bit of a thought process of how this league has messed up our relativity. And Casey, the first thing Casey wants to do is be offended by it.
Hey, listen, man. Hey. Casey has earned grumpy, ink-stained wretch status. All right?
I cannot picture Casey as a curmudgeon at all.
If you want to, I'm a curmudgeon.
What?
Yeah. Let's table that.
Cannot picture it.
If you want to see me take this video stream out to the alley and have me bust on my teenage sons, I can do that for you. Okay. Come on, man.
The furthest thing from old man wretch that I can think of. Casey's got more hair than I do.
Nobody hates the crossover carryover dribble, to your point earlier. Nobody gets more riled up about that.
Class of their own. Hey, Casey's one of us, but it's begrudgingly. Don't get it. You know what I'm saying? Like Casey's like, I guess I'll hang with you basketball peasants for a couple of
hours. I just started turning my camera on a couple weeks ago, Adam.
He just started donning his presence on this podcast because you know a couple of times management jumped on it. But as we let you go here, dude, and we appreciate you, man.
No, I appreciate you guys.
What have you learned about NBA players now that you can hear everything?
Some filthy mouths. Which, again, I'm not. Again, that is not an indictment. That is an observation. That is strict. That is one of my favorite lines that I say on a weekly basis. That is not an indictment. It is strictly an observation. Their level of communication varies. And we've talked about that a little bit. Like you can tell when teams are locked in because you just hear the communication. And I think when the Bulls have been playing at their best, you just see it. You see it and you hear it. And it's subtle, but distinct at the same time. I think we've kind of picked up on that. I think they ride that roller coaster the same way because they're in the weeds the way we're in the weeds. Like they're in it every day. Like everything that you think they don't hear, they understand, man. And I hope that most of them have thick skin because you have to to some extent to be as superior as they are at the jobs that they do. But I think they ride it, man, and they feel it. And there's a level of empathy that I've had to develop the last, you know, 2-3 years, especially starting to cover this league, because this was the league that I criticized the most coming up because it's the league that I liked the most. It's the league that I grew up on. Mm-hmm. So naturally when we all came up here, like I came up here. So my like level of perception is so elevated. Like we think so highly of ourselves in this city as a basketball city, because I believe that we should, but you also have to remember who's on the other side of this. These guys are living and dying with this. And yes, they get paid a lot of money. And yes, they get opportunities that a lot of people won't ever get. but they ride that same mental roller coaster that a lot of us do. And they perceive it the same way that we do that are in the weeds of it. That's fans included. That's us included. That's coaches, that's players, that's staff. Everybody feels this in a certain way. And the level of intensity is deep, man. So I appreciate this. It's fun to cover. It's enjoyable. It's pleasurable because the people that you work with, you know, like all you guys included, like, yeah. This has been the most enjoyable NBA experience I've had. And this is only hopefully year one of a long time. So I'm very, very thankful for it.
My man. Hey, I say it to these guys all the time, and I'm going to say it to you, man. You know, a lot of us are in different bubbles, no pun intended, right? Like where we're hyper-focused on what we have to do family-wise or responsibility-wise, but we get a chance to hang out with some pretty cool people, man. And
yeah.
And we get a chance to get paid to do it, right?
Yeah. So
we're catching a lot of blessings, even when we think we're having tough days, or you know, the world can't get off your back or whatever the case. there's a lot of people who have a lot worse than us, and
way worse.
I watch you shine, brother, and it's been cool to you know have a bond, right? Because we play Call of Duty together.
Hey, man, I like when my friends are happy and are doing cool things, and if I get to be a part of that, you know, even better. So I'm very, I don't say that as like hey, look how humble this is or whatever. No, this is the attitude that I've tried to carry, and there are days where I don't have it, and those days suck when I look back on them. The days I keep that attitude, and I think you feel the same, Jay, and I'm sure you guys, Casey and Rob, feel the same way. Those days when that's the attitude that you're going with, man, those are good days, no matter what happens during those days. So
sure. Always have something to look forward to. And if you don't, try again tomorrow, man.
Yeah, man.
No doubt. Thank you, Adam. We appreciate you, brother.
Thanks, boys.
What's the points bet? The most improved player or most improved bull? Are we going to do that? Or
I think, Tony, do we have to bring up the points bet most improved player and then talk about most improved bull, or?
I was just trying to tie it in because I doubt anybody is on the Bulls is on that list.
Not even close.
Okay.
Even though when we did our predictions, when you had us do our predictions,
yeah,
I think I'm winning that with Denzel.
Which predictions?
You were kind of you are. It was the ones that we did for the website. I think I had Wendell and you two had Kobe.
For most improved player?
Most improved Bull.
I'm most improved bull. Yeah, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. I did have Kobe.
Wendell was just finding his stride.
Wait, hold on. Wait, what? You said you're winning with Denzel?
Yeah.
You kind of
are. Yeah, what do you mean? Who's been more consistent out of Kobe, Wendell, and Denzel?
Wendell was finding his footing, man. He'll be back.
Is the question the most improved player?
I think the question was, like, who's going to benefit from the coaching change the most?
No, that was a different question. No, that was
sure. Because
that question was who's going to benefit from the coaching change the most, which I think I might be winning with because I said Sato.
I don't know how Denzel Valentine is applicable to any question. Like he hadn't played until a couple of days ago, and you know he's spotty, right? No,
yeah.
Am I wrong?
Yeah. No, you're probably right.
Yeah, that's Tony bullshit again. Talking about he picked Denzel Valentine for something. What award could you pick Denzel Valentine for on this team? All right. So most improved bull, Tony. You would if I lined Zach LaVine up and Denzel Valentine, you'd pick Denzel Valentine?
Yes, because it's not about the overall total. It's about the expectation and space where we thought he was. Nah. To where the gap that he reached to where he is now. Like, we expected a scoring jump with Zach LaVine.
No, the scoring. We called him a chucker and a gunner and an empty calorie player, and the dude is getting close to 50, 40, 90.
Still losing.
No. Most improved player has nothing to do with wins.
What
I'm saying is, like, who didn't expect this type of jump from Zach LaVine?
I didn't expect him to be shooting 50, 40, 90. You did?
I mean, it was closer to that than him getting worse.
Shit. What? Zach LaVine could be Zach LaVine from 2 years ago and nobody would bat an eyelash. Nobody would expect, like, oh, okay, the high volume scorer, you know, is still shooting a relatively low percentage, 42, 43, whatever the case may be. This dude, this entire last 10, 12 games is at 50%. He's getting a point and a half per field goal attempt. He's passing the ball. He had four turnovers in a four-game stretch, period.
Yeah, he's gotten a lot better there. The playmaking jump is the one that I think a lot of people, myself included, didn't really see coming to this magnitude. I was going to say Zach for this, to be honest.
It is.
I really think it is. But this is where this award specifically.
By the way, shout out to PointsBet Sportsbook. It's the only app that you need for all of your gaming needs. And they got the name a bet custom feature where you can just jump in there and then ask which bet you want, like Bulls assists or Bulls three-pointers. PointsBet Sportsbook is the only app you should have for your gaming needs. Go ahead, Rob.
That young six man of the year, which I'm going to be checking out as soon as we log off of the Zoom.
The bad part is you're not joking, but go ahead.
I'll give it a look. But I really think it is Zach for the durability component, the consistency. And like, this is the thing about this award. All these awards are subjective and everyone has their own definition. I mean, especially MVP, like that's been well documented over the history of that award. But this is kind of like, do you treat most improved as a bounce back player? Like, do you treat it as an unexpected jump or just a jump? But you know, the other candidates to me of really like prominent front of the rotation guys, which I think this award pretty much has to be confined to, are like Lowry. I think by the numbers, like he was well on his way, but being on and off the floor, Wendell, you know, you could say he was finding his footing, which I would, you know, right before he got hurt, but on and off the floor, like it gets tough to build that argument with that. So I honestly think it's Zach, and I just think he's completely exploded. Even if we expected a scoring jump, which we all did, like the efficiency, like it's not like he was inefficient last year. I think he was 45 or 46 from the floor, 38% from three on really high volume from three, and scoring 25, 26 points a game. Like that's reasonably efficient. Right now he's historically efficient, scoring 28 a game and, you know, a career high in assists. The turnovers have come down lately, which is good to see, but really the playmaking and even the thing, the assists don't even really tell the whole story, but Zach Billy says it all the time with the hockey assists, but the amount of double teams that he faces and ball pressure, the amount of times that his pass leads to an advantage opportunity for somebody else. Like a lot of these stat assists are coming off of, you know, initial looks from Zach because he's drawing the defensive attention. Yeah. So it's almost, I'm not comparing him to Steph Curry, but it's the Steph Curry effect of his presence on the floor bends the game to such a degree that it makes people around him better, at least offensively. I think that is a dynamic with Zach this year that maybe wasn't always true in years past. So I go him. I really don't think with the injuries it's that close, to be honest. I think his improvement has been unbelievable. Still 25, not even in his prime yet. I mean, yeah, it's just hard to overstate it.
KC?
I would go with Zach, but I got nothing to add to that because I was so perceptive from Rob. So but I do have a funny story, hopefully, to share with you. So I'm not a gambler, and shout out the points because they're going to like this story. I'm not a gambler, but on Sunday I figured it'd be fun to throw down a couple of novelty bets with my kids. So of course, you know, Points Bet sponsor, teammate of NBC Sports Chicago and employer of our friend Teddy Greenstein, longtime colleague in the Chicago Tribune. So I download the app and, you know, it's literally like 8 minutes before kickoff or 12 minutes before kickoff. I want to do the coin toss, right? Because that's like my speed of betting, right? And I got a good vibe. I'm thinking heads, Kansas City Chiefs. Our two teenage boys agree with me. We slap $25. I download the app. We slap $25 on the credit card. It says I've got instant money. I do the promo Teddy G. I get free bets. I'm like cooking with gas. I'm like, this is amazing. I go to hit heads and Chiefs. It says.
You might have to cut this part out.
And Teddy, good luck with your new job. And I use your promo, so hopefully you'll get something out of it. There's my Points Bet app story.
Oh, I hope Amin listened through part of the interview for the KC curmudgeon evidence.
You should have seen how mad I was getting.
Kenneth Curmudgeon Johnson. That's what we'll. That's what the C stands for from now on.
Old man yells at app. Oh shit! And there's nowhere for us to go after that. Shout out to PointsBet Sportsbook. That segment of KC's diatribe probably won't be in the actual podcast. But if you want to go to PointsBet Sportsbook to liven up any game that you're watching, or you know, make it a little bit more entertaining for the people around you, make sure you go to your Google Play stores, your Apple stores, or wherever you get your apps to get that PointsBet Sportsbook app. For Rob Schaefer and Casey Johnson and Tony Gill, we'd like to thank Adam Amin for hanging out with us. This has been the Bulls Talk Podcast, and hopefully it'll be that when we come back next time for you. As always, be safe and take care of each other and your sponsors. Thank you so much for listening to the Bulls Talk Podcast.
We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning.